Welcome to BrandonVaught.com, where today I'm talking with Father Robert Barron. Father Barron is the founder of Word on Fire Catholic Ministries and serves as the rector of Mundelein Seminary right outside of Chicago. He's probably best known for his epic 10-part Catholicism documentary series, which he created and hosted. Today, Father Barron and I are discussing the Pope's latest book, Jesus of Nazareth, The Infancy Narratives. The interview is a little different than the ones we've done in the past. It's not live and in person, nor is it done through Skype. Father Barron and I are exchanging video questions and answers. So let's begin, Father, by looking at the really unprecedented nature of this book. Never before have we had a pope write a multi-volume life of Christ. And so why this Jesus of Nazareth trilogy at this point in Pope Benedict's life?
Well, you know, one thing is Joseph Ratzinger wanted to retire. He wanted to end his career as the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and he wanted to go home to Bavaria and to sit in his library and to read and write. And his great project was this one, the one he dreamed of all his life. A lot of Ratzinger's writing is more occasional writing. He didn't write a major systematics like a Rahner or Balthasar. I think he wanted to do a major work, and this was it. And, you know, like most academics, he probably fantasized about that. I can't wait to get home and be alone in my library to write my books. Well, God's providence had it that he became pope. It's almost miraculous to me that he managed during that time to write this trilogy of books. I think he wrote it on Jesus of Nazareth because Jesus is always the center of Christian preoccupation. Whatever we say about God, about human beings, about the world, about creation, about salvation, it all revolves around Jesus, you know? So that was his life project for a long time. The miracle is he did it while he was pope.
In this latest book, the Holy Father really emphasizes the historicity of these infancy narratives. His aim is to show how they differentiate from both myth and legend. And so what is the difference?
Well, it's probably the central theme of the book, I would say, is that we're dealing in the infancy narratives not with myth, legend, symbol, but with history. Now, right away, you got to make some qualifications because what ancients meant by history is not what we mean by history. What we mean by history is much closer to, you know, journalistic reportage or exact retrieval of the facts. Where ancient peoples were very interested in facts, they were, but they're much more willing than we are to present those facts in a sort of interpretive context. So I would say the infancy narratives, and here I'm following Pope Benedict, have elements of the mythic and the legendary in them, but the core remains historical. And see, on that point, much hinges because Christianity is not primarily a mythic system. I love the myths. The myths are very powerful. Joseph Campbell told us myths have these fundamental functions to explain the world, to explain social reality, to explain our psychology. And they do that. Think of the great myths of the Greeks, the Romans, the Babylonians, etc. Great, great, love the myths. But the Bible is not primarily mythic in form, though there are mythic elements in it. It's primarily historical in form. It's about God's activity in history. Jesus can be very easily turned into one mythic figure among many. It's the old Gnostic temptation that goes way back to the second century, up to the present day, to say he's one more iteration of this old, you know, myth of the dying and rising God. And so the Pope, I think, is at great pains to show we're not dealing with a mythic system, but with an historical account, I would say, elaborated theologically.
Now, in the secular media, as soon as the book came out, there was a lot of fuss about really minute details in the book, things like the dating of Christ's birth, or the animals present at his birth, or the number and details surrounding the Magi. What do you make of all this fuss? Is there any controversy there?
It's much ado about nothing, in my judgment. I learned about Dionysius Exiguus when I was in fifth grade in Catholic school. He was the monk from, I think, the 6th century who did these calculations to determine exactly when Jesus was born. And he got it a little bit off kilter. So that we know now Jesus was born in what he would call 6 or 7 B.C. I learned that when I was in fifth grade in Catholic school. It didn't throw me then. It doesn't throw me now. The Pope points that out, so it's just a commonplace. When it comes to other details, you know, the later tradition filled those in with the animals and so on, with the little drummer boy, if you want, who aren't mentioned in the Gospels. Well, so what? That's the Christian imagination that amplifies the story. The roots of that, too, go back to the Jewish tradition, you know, these commentaries on the biblical stories that fill out missing details. But none of that, in my view, should be the least bit controversial.
Now, in the Gospels, we read two different accounts of Jesus's family history. Both St. Matthew and St. Luke offer seemingly contradictory genealogies. How does the Pope reconcile these differences?
Yeah, well, it's an age-old problem. There's no way you can reconcile the two genealogies. So there have been some kind of ingenious attempts to try to reconcile them, but that's sort of silly. I would again apply the principle that you're dealing here with history theologically elaborated. The genealogies are good examples of that. The historical point is that Jesus of Nazareth is deeply rooted in this ancient Jewish tradition, that you can trace his ancestry back to the very beginnings, because he's a real historical figure. No one's worried about the ancestry of, Hercules or Achilles or something, you know. But a real historical figure, you can trace his genealogy back. Now, how do they do it? They're probably borrowing from different parts of the tradition. More to it, Matthew and Luke are playing different theological games. I don't mean it in a dismissive way at all. They're making different theological points. And they're using the genealogies to illumine certain things. So our concern with exactitude, they didn't have that in the same way. They were concerned with history, but then interpreted and elaborated theologically. You see different theological elaborations going on in those two genealogies.
A favorite target today of secularists and atheists is the virgin birth. Presupposing that no supernatural miracles can occur, they reject the virgin birth as, again, legendary or mythic. What is the meaning and importance of the virgin birth?
Well, of course, it's an ancient biblical theme. They call it the unexpected birth. Go back to the mother of Samson. Go to Hannah, the mother of Samuel. Go then to Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. All those stories are meant to signal grace, that at decisive moments in Israelite history, God's grace intervenes when, humanly speaking, all seems lost. You might say that the virgin birth is the limit case of that, of something which is, from a biological standpoint, utterly impossible, yet with God, all things are possible. So at the decisive moment in salvation history, the decisive intervention of grace takes place. A second observation that's to our earlier theme about myths is many people from the 19th century on have said, well, look at all these myths of, you know, virgins giving birth and so on, and the gods impregnating virgins. Isn't this just one more version of that? And the short answer is no. What's really distinctive about the virgin birth and the stories of Jesus' birth is how you've got the opposite of rape going on. In almost all the other mythic stories, the gods move in this very aggressive way, in this very rapacious, domineering way. Often, I mean, having real intercourse with a virgin. Well, there's none of that, of course, in the biblical account. Think of the angel Gabriel announcing the incarnation, courting Mary, as it were, you know, inviting her response, and not the slightest hint of a real physical intervention on the part of God. You know, the Holy Spirit will overshadow you, the angel says. So what's also interesting is, did someone like Luke, for example, have access to the Blessed Mother? You know, she didn't disappear from the scene when Jesus ascended to heaven. And was she a source? She had to be the source. Who else could it be to talk about these extremely, you know, private things? And so there's that mystery of particularity, of historical truth, that these writers were relying on traditions going back to Mary herself, who witnessed to this truth.
Now, going back to his days as Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI has written dozens and dozens of books. Where does this trilogy on Jesus of Nazareth fit in, and how does it affect his legacy?
Well, I think they're extremely important to his legacy. As I said earlier, I think that's what he always wanted to do. This was his the great project of his life. But it was postponed because of all those years, what, 26 years, I think, when he was in this extremely difficult, sensitive role. He just didn't have time for that kind of sustained scholarship. Again, the miracle is he found time as Pope to do it. You know, I think it's, in many ways, the crowning of his academic career. And I think when people read him, as they will in 100 years or 200 years, they'll read these books precisely as that culmination of a career.
Thanks again, Father, for sharing your great insights on the Pope's book. For more from Father Barron, check out wordonfire.org. And for more interviews, articles, book reviews, and more, check out my website, brandonvaught.com. Thanks for tuning in.